Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show Best Of Podcast.
And welcome back. We are really looking forward to this next conversation. Of course, last week we commemorated the 40th anniversary of Coach Bryant's death, and a couple of people who figured large in his career. In fact, three of his former players will be joining us in a minute, talking about this book, about the integration of Alabama's football program, written by the acclaimed artist Steve Skipper. And joining us from Birmingham is Mr. Skipper, along with Ricky Davis, who played football quite well, I might add, at the University of Alabama for Coach Bryant, later went on to become an attorney. And I don't want to call Ricky a sports agent, because that's really not fair to his level of integrity. But guys, Steve, great to see you. And Ricky, I feel like I talk to you all the time, so it's even better to say hello to you from this end. Ricky, let me start with you, because I know the role you have played in trying to get attention and awareness for what this special group of players have done, because I've been with you on a number of occasions. So let's start with how this project came about. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul. Appreciate you having us on. Steve was commissioned, Steve Skipper was commissioned by the Bryant Museum to do a painting commemorating the integration of the Alabama football program. Wilbur Jackson had signed with Alabama, and then John Mitchell was a junior college transfer our freshman year. And so Wilbur was there in 1970, and John came in 1971. So Steve did a painting, and he and I were talking, and we discussed the possibility of doing a book where you had not just the painting to tell the story, but you had comments from former players, coaches, administrators, civil rights leaders, to just talk about the integration of the Alabama football program. And so that's, I've never been involved in doing a book. Steve had never been involved in doing a book, but it, we're real pleased with the way it turned out.
It's a beautiful book, and we showed it a minute ago. Steve, tell us a little bit about getting into this project. And I mean, I would assume some of the, if not most of the material you knew, but take us through the process.
Well, I think the research and everything, it pushed me into an area with Coach Bryant and his, you know, we already celebrate his legacy, but at the same time, once we got into the research, we started to see that his legacy was a whole lot greater than we thought it was. The way he went about doing what he did in that climate that he had to do it in, it was absolutely incredible. And he made a statement that he wanted to be the Branch Rickey of college football. Branch Rickey was the man that integrated Major League Baseball with Jackie Robinson. And as you know, Branch Rickey not only picked a great baseball player, but he picked the right man for the season, for the hour. And Coach Bryant picked the right two players to integrate the football team at the University of Alabama. And the rest is an epic, rich legacy.
Ricky, you grew up in this area, and you know, there's so many people have had countless things to say about Coach Bryant, about why it took so long. But you were there as a high school player, and ultimately a recent signee with Alabama while all this was happening. What do you remember from where you stood?
Well, I grew up in Bessemer, and my senior year at Bessemer, in Bessemer, they closed the predominantly white high school, closed the predominantly black high school, and merged it to Jeff Lanier High School. And so that was kind of a remember the Titans type of a occurrence for me, because we went from having maybe 10% blacks at Old Bessemer High School to at Jeff Lanier High School, it was probably 55% black, 45% white. And so I kind of experienced the integration of the program, and we didn't have any problems at high school, at the high school level. And then our freshman class, you know, Wilbur was already in Tuscaloosa, and then our freshman class, Sylvester Croom, Mike Washington, and Ralph Stokes were three black players in our freshman class. And John Mitchell was a junior college transfer. So it's one of those things where, you know, and Coach Bryant, like Steve said, Coach Bryant played such an unbelievable strong role in putting all this together and making it work. Because like Steve said, he picked the right two guys in Wilbur Jackson and John Mitchell. And then in our class was Sylvester Croom, Mike Washington, and Ralph Stokes. And so the character of the players that were recruited and then Coach Bryant's leadership made the difference in Tuscaloosa. And you can ask John and Wilbur, they'll be able to speak to it better than I can. But I don't remember any really big things happening that put any kind of a blanket or something over what was going on in Tuscaloosa.
Steve, as someone who knew the story, but it obviously became immersed in it, in the research, were there surprises, or did you feel like you had a pretty good handle going in on what you would ultimately put down in this book?
Well, we wanted to dispel a whole lot of different myths, because people have a whole lot of different ideas about what they think was the reason why Coach Bryant integrated the football team. And we really wanted to tell the story and get the truth out there about why he integrated the football team. And a lot of people think that it was about the Southern Cal game that they didn't feel, but it wasn't. Coach Bryant had tried to integrate football team at Kentucky and Texas A&M with no success. But he had already integrated the football team, and Wilbur Jackson was in the stands at the Southern Cal game. But because freshmen couldn't play during that time, he had to sit in the stands and watch the game. But Coach Bryant had already done the dirty work, as you say. But I think that in dispelling all those myths and getting the real truth out there about how it was, and you can't forget the climate in which he put this together, because if you look at it as just the integration of the football team, you're going to miss the whole boat. The whole climate that was in the state of Alabama and that was in the South at the time was terrible. And in the midst of all of that, something great happened. And something that not only changed the football team, but changed the culture of the Southeast.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, Steve, because I can't tell you how many times I've interviewed guests who have written books from somewhere else. And they use a line about John McKay and that game. And, yeah, I mean, I've given up trying to argue back the facts of the matter, and we'll talk to the man who was sitting in the stands that night in a minute. But it is such a myth, and I know no matter how hard we try, some people are not going to believe the truth, are they, Ricky?
No, that's true. And you know, and John, you know, Coach McKay was bragging to Coach Bryant when they were visiting, and Coach McKay was telling Coach Bryant how he was signing this defensive end from a junior college in Arizona, from Mobile, Alabama, a black defensive end. His name was John Mitchell. And so Coach Bryant immediately goes and gets on the phone and calls people in Mobile and said, hey, I need you to call every John Mitchell senior in Mobile, Alabama, because we're not letting John Mitchell go to Southern Cal. So that's John can go into that a lot better detail than I can. But like Steve said, I mean, Coach Bryant was really, and Paul, you know, we did an event at the 16th Street Baptist Church several years ago, and talking to players from Auburn and Alabama about the integration of the programs. And, you know, Coach Bryant did such a, like Steve said, did such a tremendous job of handling the situation. You know, Coach Bryant has said before, when people ask him, how many black players do you have on your team? He said, I don't have any black players. How many white players do you have on your team? I don't have any white players. I've got football players on my team. And that was the way that Coach Bryant said it. And he followed it. And everybody else, Coach Bryant was such a tremendous leader that everybody fell in line with that.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that 16th Street Baptist Church event, Ricky. That's one of the most memorable nights of my career, being there with those players at that shining cathedral of this time, of one of the absolute greatest tragedies of the civil rights movement or of any time in history. We'll take a short break. Steve Skipper and Ricky Davis, we will come back and talk to John Mitchell and ask him what he remembers about everyone in Mobile trying to find him so he could say no to Southern Cal, and obviously Wilbur Jackson, the young man who became one of the most storied figures in Alabama history. All of that coming up next.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're here with our conversation, and we want to welcome to the program two figures who recently were celebrated in Tuscaloosa, Wilbur Jackson and John Mitchell. Wilbur, thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate it. Good afternoon, and it's great to say hello to both of you. Wilbur and John, thanks for being here. Yeah, let me make sure Wilbur and John can hear me. Guys, are we all set?
Yes, we're good.
Well, thank you. Yeah. I appreciate you being here. Wilbur, thanks for coming on. And I know this story is getting long in the tooth, but it's important. Take us back to your decision, Wilbur, to make the move to Alabama, which is now literally in the history books.
My choice to attend the University of Alabama. First of all, thanks for having me here today. But my decision to go to the university was easy because I only had one scholarship offer at that particular time. You know, my father had put both of my sisters through school at the same time, and he had worked the same job for 45 years, hard backbreaking work. So he offered the same opportunity to my brother. My brother started to think we were at home, so he decided not to go to school, just go to work. And he ended up in Vietnam after being drafted. And for me, I thought I had a chance to get a scholarship, but you know, none came. The only one that came was from Coach Bryant, the University of Alabama. So my choice was really pretty easy.
Wilbur, considering we're still talking about it 53 years later, did you? I know what the answer to this is, but I mean, did you ever think it would be an inflection point in the history of college sports?
Didn't have a clue. I was talking to John earlier, and I just said, first of all, what did it 50 years ago? and when you're 18, you just don't see things the way you do when you're 50. And I had no idea that what we did at that particular time, the guys that came after us did it at that particular time, that we will be talking about it today. And all the changes that would come from us making that step and going to the university and looking back at it, you know, it's a moment that I'm proud of.
John, your story is a little different. You played ball in Mobile, Alabama. You went off to a junior college, and then you were about to head to Southern Cal. Ricky alluded to the story a minute ago. I've heard it one night having dinner with you, and it's one of the all-time stories. I mean, all of your stories are classic, I might add. But this one, take us through your first recollection of when suddenly you realized that a man in Tuscaloosa was trying to find you.
I went to Eastern Arizona Junior College, and our rivalry at that time was Western Arizona. So for some reason, when we played, I played pretty well. My coach did not recommend me to Southern Cal. It was the coach at Western Arizona. And I was in the dorm one day, and the phone rang. And one of the guys answered the phone in the dorm, said, "Hey, John McKay is on the phone." I said, "Yeah, John McKay. He's not calling John Mitchell." So I got the phone, and it was John McKay. And he said, "Hey, I want to offer you a scholarship to come to the University of Southern Cal. Hey, I want to get you out there for a visit as soon as you can." So I go to Southern Cal, and a lot of the guys at Southern Cal at that time, I had played against at Arizona Western, so I knew them. And it was really an easy visit. But Coach McKay was bragging to Coach Bryan. Coach Bryan was out there to speak at Coach McKay clinic that he was recruiting a guy. He was going to sign a guy from Mobile, Alabama, that played at Eastern Arizona. So at that time, they had recruiters. The late Phil McRae, who was a judge in Mobile that attended law school at Alabama, Coach Bryan called it and said, "Hey, I want you to call every John Mitchell senior in the phone book till you get John Mitchell Jr." And my father was the senior. So they called, and I talked to Coach Bryan very briefly that day. And the next day, Alabama had just played, I think, in Houston in the bowl game. The next day in my mom's house in Mobile was Clem Christer, Hayden Riley, and Pat Dye. And they started recruiting me to come to the University of Alabama.
Okay, see, John, so it gets pretty serious. And you told me this story years ago, and I'm going to let you pick it up. But it's one I've tried to tell others many times, and I'm sure I've gotten it all wrong. But to say, when Coach Bryant finally got to your house, pick up the story with how the conversation went with your mom.
Well, we were at the University in Alabama. Coach Bryan, first quarterback, Bobby Jackson, drove my father, my mother, and myself up to Tuscaloosa. And we're sitting in Coach Bryan's office. And my mom didn't know anything about football. And that was one reason I wanted to go somewhere closer where she could see me play. And out of the blue, she looked right at Coach Bryan and said, "Now, what's your name?" And he said, "Paul Bear Bryant." And I about crawled under the table because, you know, that didn't make my mom. She just didn't know anything about football. And a lot of coaches had been coming in and out of our house, and she couldn't keep up with any of the coaches' name. But that was one story that I'll never forget.
Did she have any issue with you going there ultimately, John? Because she obviously didn't know. She had to ask Coach Bryan his name. I'm still laughing at that. How did the tide turn, so to speak?
Well, she suggested to Coach Bryan one thing. She said, "Hey, if you have to discipline my son, call me. Don't put your hands on it, and I will take care of the situation." And Coach Bryan and I laughed, and my father laughed, because at that time, it was only Wilma was there, so it was only one other African-American player there, so she was concerned about my safety and how I would be treated.
We're talking to John Mitchell and Wilbur Jackson. And Wilbur, Ricky Davis alluded to this a few minutes ago, and it's part of the legend of college football that the Southern Cal game turned everything around. And, you know, you've heard all, you were, and the most incredible part of that when Southern Cal came into Legion Field with Sam Cunningham was you were at the game already on board. Tell us about that night, what you were thinking, and then later the legends that grew from that moment that that was the moment in time that, that broke the color barrier when you were already there.
Yes, that's correct. I've heard the story so many times before, and I stopped trying to explain to people that I was in the stand that night. Freshmen weren't able to play at that particular time. And so the story that I've heard was that after the game, Coach Bryant goes into Southern Cal's locker room, brings Sam Cunningham to the Bama's locker room and tell them, this is what a football player looks like. And I've heard the story repeated so many times before, and I said, well, I was already there. I've heard people, you know, I've heard people on TV shows say the exact same thing. I said, no, that's not so. I was already there. I just wasn't able to play. I was in the stand watching the game. So I don't know how it's just kind of like that fish story just kept getting bigger and bigger over time. And that's where we are today. And I thought, why you just stop trying to convince people that you were there?
Well, we're doing a good job today trying to put that to bed, but something tells me we will not succeed, even with the source telling us. John, we've talked about it so many times since, and I know you both of you were recently honored in Tuscaloosa, but how cognizant of you, having been in Arizona, having grown up in the South, were you of what was happening here with you and Wilbur, this moment in time, and did it feel like the two of you were shattering history at a place with a very dark past?
You know, my biggest concern at that time, it was I capable of playing for the University of Alabama? You know, and growing up right there in Mobile and the 60s, national championships that they have won. I was kind of doubting my ability. Am I good enough to go to Alabama? So when I went to Alabama, all my concentration was on, hey, I got to make this football team, and I'm going to do whatever I have to do to show that I'm capable of being here.
And Wilbur, you both had great careers at Alabama. And in terms of dealing with a predominantly white team. I mean, I've heard from the other side that they welcomed you. We heard Ricky say that earlier. Was the most important thing just trying to be a good player at Alabama because the competition was so stiff? Or did the color aspect play into it at all?
Most of it is trying to make the team and do the best that you possibly could do, and make everyone else realize that you were there for the same thing that they were there for, to make the team better and to show that you were a good person. Because even though John and I were good athletes, I think Coach Bryant recruited us even more so because he wanted good young men. And he wanted good young men that were gonna turn into good older men. And that was the deal there. And I've told people before that there's never been a doubt in my mind that before Coach Bryant offered a scholarship, that my father and my mother was kind of scrutinized by people in the community to say, okay, what is his background like? And my dad and my mom's background was solid gold. So I think Coach Bryant figured, after hearing everything about my father and my mother, he just kind of figured that the fruit wasn't going to fall too far from the tree. So that's when I was recruited to come to the university. And after that, and then when John came in, that made me feel a little bit more comfortable. And then my roommate, Joe Dowdy, there were some guys that were just outstanding. You had a couple of guys from Ozark, Ellis Bacon, Dexter Wood, that made it easier. Guys from Dothan that made it easier, guys from the Wiregrass area that made it easier for me. But for the most part, never any big issues, certainly nothing physical. It was just a fairly smooth transition.
John, as we wrap up with John Mitchell and Wilbur Jackson, you've spent a lifetime after you left there in coaching, most of it in recent years with the Pittsburgh Steelers. So you've been subjected to some of the great franchises, some of the great people in all of sports history. What do you carry with you from those days, especially from Coach Bryant? We're still talking about him 40 years after his death. What is there a specific or general thing that you took away from that period that has always been your compass in life?
You know, the thing that Coach Bryant taught me more so than anything, never quit. And, you know, when I was recruited by him, and I'm sitting in his office, he said, you know, things might not go the way you want them, but hey, you hang in there and things will work out. You know, as a coach, and I tell people this all the time, the same thing that I was taught at Alabama by Coach Bryant and my position coach, my 32 years in the National Football League, that's the same thing I'm coaching today. And, you know, it worked in, it worked for me. So that's what I took away from Alabama and from Coach Bryant. You know, I was a young coach when he hired me. And, you know, I tried to soak up everything that he said. I still got my binders with my notes in it from our staff meet, how he did things. And I said, if I'm going to be a successful coach, whether on the college level or in the National Football League, I better have a pretty good foundation. My foundation started with Coach Bryant at the University of Alabama.
And Wilbur, as we reflect back here, you know, so many years later, and it's a story that will be told until the end of time. Just your thoughts on you and John and so many others too. But you were the first, you know, being part of a seminal moment in sports history.
You know, I always think back to one of the three things that Coach Bryant told us when we first got there. He always said that three things: never do anything to embarrass your mother or your father, never do anything to embarrass this university, never do anything to embarrass yourself. Now, embarrassing my mother and father, that was off the table to begin with, because if I hadn't done that, that would have been coming along before I got to the university. But in terms of respecting yourself, carrying yourself with class, always treating everybody with dignity, if you did those three or four things, life was going to work out for you in a positive way.
What an extraordinary conversation with John Mitchell and Wilbur Jackson. Gentlemen, thank you for making time for us. I know Wilbur had to make a tremendous effort to be available for this conversation today, and we are in both of your debts, as well as Steve and Ricky Davis. Be well. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, guys. What an incredible conversation with the four of them, including Wilbur Jackson and John Mitchell. We will take a short break. Your reaction when we come back.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And welcome back as we continue. What a conversation with Wilbur and John Mitchell. We really appreciate them being here today. Let's get some phone calls going, and then Adam Rittenberg, top of the next hour, on Nick Saban's quest to find an offensive coordinator. Let's check in with Mac in Florida. Hello, Mac.
Hey, Paul. How are you today?
Very well. Thank you.
Good. Listen, I love the show. I tape it every day, so I never miss an episode.
Oh, thank you very
Question.
Much.
Yes, sir. Question. The way I see it, Nick Saban in his sock drawer has 7 championship rings, and I think Kirby has 6. Now then, 4 of those came through Alabama, but he does have 6. What do you see, or let me ask you this. Do you know anybody, who's the next guy that's got as many rings or close to it, whether they were a player, then a coach, or an assistant? Can you think of anybody that's got anywhere near six of them?
Yeah, well, not present day. I think Mal Moore back in the day had that many. He had actually quite a few more, including his athletic directorship. But I would have to think about it. There might be an outlier there somewhere, but I can't think of one.
Yeah, okay, all right. And last question, do you think Kirby will get to seven before Nick gets to eight?
Yeah, I mean, it's with Kirby, I think this next year is going to be the indicator. I mean, if somehow he wins it again, then you just have to think all bets are off, because he's spitting them out with such regularity if he does. But I think Saban is the better question right now. You know, what does he have left in him? I think it would be a good bet to say he'll have another one. But
so he'll get to eight before Kirby gets to seven.
Yeah, I mean, I would have to think so. Well, I'll take that bet right now.
Yeah, okay, good. No, that's all good, man.
Yeah.
All right, man. Hey, again, I appreciate you taking my
Thank
call.
You
Love
for,
the show,
for,
and have a great day.
Thanks so much for calling. I appreciate that. Bobby in Oxford, you're on the air. Hello, Bobby.
Hey, Paul. Hope today finds you and your staff well.
Thank you.
I got a couple of comments. That was a good interview with the guys earlier, and I wanted to say yesterday Annie and Augie, and today Jerry called about health issues, and you showed a lot of empathy, and that's really refreshing.
Thank you.
And then I was gonna say, if Larry ever gets to Memphis, tell him I'll take him to the VA, and we'll grab some beer and we'll just sit there, because if you're dealing with the VA, that's what you're going to do. But my questions are, Ed Orgeron and Houston Nutt, are they ever going to coach again? And then the second question was, and I know Houston Nutt's not going to Ole Miss and is sure not going to Hugh Freeze, but so defense defines championships, right? But has Lane done anything as far as shoring up the defense?
Well, yes, he hired Pete Golding from Alabama.
Okay, I don't know anything about him.
Well, the thing about Pete Golding is Ole Miss fans were happy that he took the job, and Alabama fans were happy he took the job. Mike is up next in Alabama. Hello, Mike.
Hello, Paul. I had just walked in and turned the television on and saw my high school classmate interviewing with you, Wilbur Jackson.
Oh, my goodness. So, well, tell us about playing with Wilbur.
I did not play football.
Going
I was
to school
in
with
the
Wilbur.
Band when you were... Oh, you there?
Yeah, well, tell us about going to high school with Wilbur.
I did. In 1969, the federal government closed the school that was a predominantly black school, D.A. Smith in Ozark, Alabama, and all of those kids came to Carroll High School, and that was predominantly white, and Wilbur was one of those kids
right.
that came there. And I'm fixing to get emotional. Wilbur is listed in Eli Gold's book as Bear's Boys. Wilbur sent me a copy through my sister with autograph to me, and I wouldn't take anything for that.
Well, that is so nice of him to do that.
Wilbur is one of the nicest people you will ever in your life meet. And I had the privilege of eating supper with him back in May when we had our 50th high school reunion. It was postponed 2 years because of COVID.
Right.
And I got to see Wilbur. I see him periodically. My sister still lives in Ozark, and I go there just about every weekend and check on her. She lives by herself. And I do see Wilbur from time to time. Wilbur is one of the nicest, considerate human beings that has ever been put on this earth. Not only was he a great football player, he is even a better person. And I know that personally.
Well, Mike, I am so pleased that you were able to get home in time to see Wilbur, and we appreciate that very much. We'll take a short break. Coming up in a few minutes, Adam Rittenberg on Nick Saban's quest to find new coordinators. Your phone calls around the corner.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back here on a Tuesday afternoon, and Mud Turtle is up next. Hey, Mud.
Hey, Paul. How are you doing?
We are doing great. Thank you.
Question about callers, and you may have, for example, for me, I don't know, I guess I tried 75 to 100 times to get in, and now it's been about an hour since I did finally get in. You have other callers like Larry and Legend, I-Man, who apparently get in anytime they want to, and I think you've addressed that. But my question is, do you let them in just throw grenades into the room?
No, I mean, in all candor, which is what you're asking for here, we have a lot of calls, call lines. There's not a specific system, because I really, if I look closely, I could see how long everyone's on hold, but it's not very large, so I'm looking down quickly, and it's the only way I could say it, it's by instinct. I look down, and it's a split second decision where to go. And a lot of it is just where are we in the program? If we're talking about something and another caller is in the same range, I may go to that caller first, or maybe I want to change direction. So I know that's not a great answer in terms of making this a democratic system, but, you know, I'll look down and maybe I'll see one of those guys that you mentioned, and I'll just go to them to shake things up. So there's almost no rhyme or reason to how I do it. Maybe a little bit like directing an orchestra, where you just, you know, you're doing, you know, Beethoven's ninth is starting to drag, so you kind of hit a specific sound a little, maybe to pipe it up a little bit more than where you are. So I appreciate you asking. I wish I had a better answer. I don't. Ed is next in Texas. So hello, Ed.
Hey, Paul. How you doing? I appreciate you taking my call.
Thank you.
I met you last year at the SEE Media Day in Atlanta. I think the first year, right before you went on the show, you were sitting in the lobby talking to a bunch of us. And you'd asked me, I'd had a black cap, a Vietnam cap on.
Oh, I remember you, so, yes.
Yeah, and after talking to you, I talked to your producer or your manager for a good while. But recently I called, you've been doing an article, interviews by Bear Bryant, which is well-deserved, and it was really outstanding, and the guests you've had. But I've picked up a book I've had for a long time about the Junction Boys. I don't know if you've ever read that book or not.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
When you're the A&M. And it is very entertaining, and it gives a great insight to Bear Bryant before he came to Alabama. A couple of things that are familiar with Alabama that you probably know is two of the boys that went through the junction was Gene Stallings and the late, I can't think of his name right now, played for Washington, coached in Washington.
Was it Jack Pardee? Jack?
Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, Jim Dent wrote that book, and they did a film on it. It is one of the best books on college football I've ever read.
Yeah. Well, one thing, I read a couple of things in there that I just want to bring to light, and I'm going to hang up and let you talk.
Okay.
A couple of things. When Alabama beat Penn State in the Sugar Bowl, the reporters asked Barry Blind what he would like to do next, and he said that he'd like to have a reunion with the Junction Boys. And he further said, that was my favorite team. And the reporters about dropped their little notepad when he said that. But he did have a reunion junction with those that made it through the 10 days of hell, they so-called. And they gave him a ring. And his wife made a statement, said that Bear never wore any jewelry. But when he passed away, that was the only piece of jewelry he had on him was the ring that they gave to him.
No, and even Ed, even at his funeral, I remember seeing a couple of writers and people who knew him then. Now that, I'll tell you this, it's a great story. It's a Coach Stallings has told me a few stories about that as well. And fortunately, nobody died at Junction. That's all I'll say. We'll take a short break.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.